followers of the Flower Dragon clashed bloodily with the Sword of Islam. Now the leader of the Flower Dragon movement sat on the other side of the exquisite tea set from Nobuhiko. Umetsu wore a modern business suit, as did Yamagata. The leader of the Flower Dragon movement had the lean, parched face of an ascetic, his head shaved bald, a thin, dark mustache drooping down the corners of his mouth almost to his jawline. The expression on his face was severe, disapproving. Nobuhiko felt distinctly uneasy in his presence, almost ashamed of his well-fed girth. Yet Nobu understood that Umetsu had come to him. "I called, and he came," Yamagata told himself. "I'm not without power here." The fact that Umetsu was apparently a few years younger than he should have made Nobu feel even more in command of this meeting. But it didn't. Umetsu had arrived at the Yamagata family estate in an unmarked helicopter, accompanied by four younger men. Nobu had chosen his family's home for this meeting so that they would be safe from the prying eyes and news media snoops that were unavoidable in the corporate offices in New Kyoto. Here, on this spacious estate up in the hills, surrounded by servants who had been with the family for generations, he could have airtight security. They sat in a small room paneled in polished oak, the tea set between them. The wall to Nobu's right was a sliding shoji screen. To his left, a window looked out on a small, enclosed courtyard and raked stone garden. The kimono-clad women who had served the tea had left the room. Umetsu's aides were being fed in another room, far enough away so that they could not overhear their master's discussion with Yamagata, close enough so that they could reach him quickly if they had to. Nobu understood without being told that those young men were bodyguards. "What do you want of me?" Umetsu asked, dropping all pretense of polite conversation. He had not touched the lacquered cup before him. Nobu took a sip of the hot, soothing tea before answering, "There is a task that must be done in complete secrecy." Umetsu said nothing. "I had thought of negotiating with one of the Islamic groups," Nobu went on. "They are accustomed to the concept of martyrdom."
"Yet you have asked to speak with me in private."
"It is a very delicate matter." Umetsu took in a long, slow breath.
"A matter that involves death."
"Many deaths, most likely."
"The followers of the Flower Dragon's Way do not fear death. Many of them believe in reincarnation."
"You do not?" Nobuhiko asked.
"My beliefs are not the subject of this meeting."
Nobu bowed his head a centimeter or so.
"Just what is it that you require?" asked Umetsu.
Now Nobuhiko hesitated, trying to fathom what lay behind his guest's hooded eyes. "Can I trust him? Is this the best way for me to go?" He wished he had his father here to advise him, but the elder Yamagata was still locked away in the Himalayas, playing at being a lama. "What I require," Nobu said at last, "must never be traced back to me or to Yamagata Corporation. Is that clear?"
"Never." Umetsu almost smiled. "It must be truly horrible for you to be so afraid."
"Horrible enough," said Nobu. "Horrible enough."
"Then what is it?"
"The Sky Tower. It must be destroyed." Umetsu drew in a breath.
"I have been informed that the Sky Tower is being built by nanomachines."
"Surprised," Nobuhiko blurted. "Where did you hear that?" Allowing himself a thin smile, Umetsu replied,
"Flower Dragon has contacts in many places, including the new morality."
"I did not realize that they are using nanomachines."
"Of a sort. They are within the law, apparently, but just barely."
"Perhaps we could stop them legally, through the international courts." Umetsu shook his head the barest fraction of a centimeter.
"Do not put your faith in the courts. Direct action is better."
"Then you are willing to help me?" Nobuhiko asked.
"Of course. The Sky Tower must be destroyed."
"Yes,
and it must be destroyed in a manner that will discredit the very idea of building such towers. It must be brought down in a disaster so stunning that no one will ever dare to bring up the idea of building another." Nobuhiko felt his cheeks flushing and realized that he was squeezing his miniature teacup so hard its edge was cutting into the flesh of his palm. Umetsu seemed unmoved. "How do you intend to accomplish this tremendous feat?" Regaining his self-control, Nobuhiko put the lacquered cup back on its tray as he answered, "My technical people know how to bring it down. They have all the information we require. What I need is men who will do the task. Men who will become martyrs." Nobuhiko bowed his head once again. "That is not terribly difficult," said Umetsu. "There are those who welcome death, especially if they believe they will accomplish something of worth in their dying."
"But it must be kept absolutely secret," Nobuhiko repeated in an urgent hiss. "It must never be traced back to Yamagata Corporation."
Umetsu closed his eyes briefly. "We can recruit martyrs from elsewhere. Even the fat Americans have fanatics among their new morality groups."
"Truly?"
Nobuhiko asked. "But what of your own technicians? Will they be martyred also?"
"That will not be necessary."
"Yet they will have the knowledge that you wish kept secret. Once the tower falls, they will know that you have done it."
"They will be far from Earth when that happens," Nobuhiko said. "I have already had them transferred to Yamagata operations in the asteroid belt."
Umetsu considered this for a moment. "I have heard that the asteroid belt is a very dangerous place."
"It can be."
"Wars have been fought there. Many were killed."
"I have heard that the Flower Dragon has followers even in the belt. Loyal followers."
Umetsu understood Nobu's unspoken request. This time he did smile thinly. "So your people will not be martyrs. Instead, they will fall victims to accidents."
"As you said," Nobu replied, "the belt is a very dangerous place."
Ciudad de Cielo. Elliot Danvers was lonely after Molina left for Australia. He missed their meals together, their adversarial chats, the verbal cut and parry that kept his mind stimulated. Over the weeks that followed Molina's departure, Danvers tried to forget his own needs and buried himself in his work. No, he reminded himself time and again, "Not my work, God's work." He felt puzzled that Atlanta had shown no visible reaction to his report that nanotechnology was being used to build the Sky Tower. He had expected some action, or at least an acknowledgement of his intelligence. Nothing. Not a word of thanks or congratulations on a job well done. Well, he told himself, a good conscience is our only sure reward. And he plunged himself deeper into his work. Still, he felt nettled, disappointed, ignored. He went to Bracknell and asked permission to convert one of the warehouse buildings into a non-denominational chapel. As the Sky Tower neared completion, some of the buildings fell into disuse, some of the workers departed for their homes. Danvers noted that there seemed to be fewer Yankee and Latino construction workers in the streets, and more Asian computer and electronics technicians. "A chapel?" Bracknell looked surprised when Danvers raised the question. Standing in front of Bracknell's desk, Danvers nodded. "You have several empty buildings available. I don't need much in the way of..." You mean you've been working here all this time without a church building?" Bracknell looked genuinely surprised. Where do you hold your services?" "Outdoors mostly, sometimes in my quarters, for smaller groups." Bracknell's office was far from imposing, nothing more than a corner room in the corrugated metal operations building. He sat at a scuffed and dented steel desk. One wall held a smart screen that nearly reached the low ceiling. Another had photos of the tower at various stages of its construction pasted to it. Two windows looked out on the streets, and beyond one of them, the dark trunk of the tower, rising above the distant green hills and into the heavens. Gesturing to the plain plastic chair in front of his desk, Bracknell said, I thought we already had a church here someplace." Danvers smiled bitterly as he settled his bulk in the creaking little chair. You,